Welcome back to the History Show on RTE Radio 1. We've been hearing about the Mountjoy hunger strike in 1920, and the driving force behind that strike was Paddy Clancy. He, along with Dick McKee, was a prominent figure in the Dublin Brigade of the IRA, and the killing of Clancy and McKee on Bloody Sunday 1920 had a huge personal impact on Michael Collins and other prominent rebel leaders. Historian Cormac O'Corry joins me now from his home in Galway to tell us about this enigmatic revolutionary. Cormac is co-author, along with Stefan O'Corry, of the book Paddy Clancy, Easter Rising Hero, Bloody Sunday Martyr. Cormac, you're very welcome indeed to the History Show. Could you start by telling us a little bit about Clancy's background?
Clancy was from West Clare. He was from a small village called Cranny. His father was an IRB man, and the house was an ordered meeting point for meetings with the organisation as well as other radical groups. As an area, Cranny would have been on the more radical side of nationalist politics. It was a Pernellite stronghold. It was one of the first areas in Clare, for example, to have a Sinn Féin coming, and during the 1914 split in the Irish Volunteers, they opted for the more radical version of the Volunteers. So Clancy would have grown up in this kind of atmosphere. And as the youngest in a large family, he had no hope of inheriting the family farm. So he went to nearby Kildysert, where he qualified as a draper. Now, in Kildysert, again, Clancy involved himself in politics. He was an active member of the Gaelic League. He was also a secretary of a local common for Sinn Féin. And then after a brief period in Newcastle West, County Limerick, and in Youghal in County Cork, he moved to Dublin, where he joined the Irish Volunteers.
And how prominent did he become in the Irish Volunteers, and how quickly did that rise happen?
He must have been well trusted early on, because he was involved in the Kilcool gun running, where arms were smuggled in after the Howth gun running. Now, the Howth gun running was public, but the Kilcool gun running in Wicklow was much more secretive. He really comes to prominence during the course of the Easter Rising. He was a member of the C Company, 1st Battalion of the Irish Volunteers. And during the course of the Rising, he was in charge of a barricade near the forecourts. And he distinguished himself during the Rising for his leadership ability as well as his bravery. And he was promoted to lieutenant in the field.
And then what happened to him after the surrender?
He was originally sentenced to death, but the executions were suspended, and including Clancy's, most of the executions. And he was sentenced to prison in Britain. Now, by the summer of 1917, all the Easter Rising prisoners were released. He'd got to know most of the rebel leaders during imprisonment and the like, most of the active and the senior rebel leaders that had survived. So he would have known, we say, Eamon De Valere and the likes.
So in 1917, he's released, and presumably he throws himself back into the Republican movement with a vengeance.
Clancy was extremely active in the period between the Easter Rising and his release, and then up to kind of 1919 and 20, in every aspect of the Republican movement. A bit like Collins, he didn't necessarily have to stick to his own job within the Volunteers. So he involved himself in the electoral campaigns, but also as well in things like smuggling arms, stealing, buying arms, jailbreaks, clashes with the Crown Forces, attacks on the Crown Forces, all these kind of things.
Now, it's probably unfair to both men, but it's almost like you cannot mention Paddy Clancy without mentioning Dick McKee. At what point did they get together, and how closely associated were they?
It's hard to establish a point where they actually met each other first. I mean, they were both in different battalions and they were imprisoned separately after the Rising. But they certainly became extremely close. And when you're reading accounts written by volunteers of that period, veterans of that period, whatever McKee is mentioned, Clancy is generally mentioned as well. By 1920, they're constantly involved with each other in the Republican movement. They're at each other's sides, and McKee is the commandant of the Dublin Brigade and Clancy is the vice commandant.
Now, in terms of Clancy's military career, he is compared in many respects to Collins, both I think in terms of his personality, in terms of his charisma. Would that be fair? Would that be accurate?
Clancy was an extremely charismatic individual. He could be extremely considerate when dealing with people under his command. He was hardworking. He was very committed to the cause. Now, one of the characteristics that both himself and Collins shared was that they were willing to bend the rules to accommodate, we'd say, the more radical members of the Volunteers. You know, fellas like Dan Breen and Sean Tracy, who were pushing the boundaries, who were taking the war to the British as they saw it. But this wasn't always done with the support of IRA General Headquarters. This wasn't always done with the support of their own leadership. So Clancy and Collins and others were on that radical side of the movement. And naturally enough, they were popular with like-minded individuals.
And how did Clancy end up in Mountjoy Jail?
Violence was increasing. in Dublin, particularly from the summer of 1919 onward. And the British forces, the British government in Dublin Castle, they tried to clamp down the Republican movement and pursue it maybe a bit more aggressively than they had before then. As part of a general roundup of active Republicans and the like, Clancy was arrested in March of 1920 and he was brought to Mountjoy. Now, Mountjoy would have held convicted and untried Republican prisoners.
Now, we heard earlier in the programme about the Mountjoy hunger strike. Tell us about Clancy's role in that strike.
Clancy was one of three elected leaders that the unconvicted prisoners had in Mountjoy. But it's Clancy who comes to dominate the hunger strike. He presses the issue. The issue starts off as a hunger strike about political status, but Clancy recognises the weakness of the government position, the British government position, that they didn't want to see any hunger striker die, particularly one that was unconvicted. And he recognised this, and he just basically refused any concessions that the British authorities might offer, the prison authorities. So it ultimately became a hunger strike that led to the release of both unconvicted and convicted prisoners, rather than merely achieving the original goal of prisoner of war status. And that was basically down to Clancy recognising that the British desperately needed a compromise and refusing it to give it to them.
Now, I think he demonstrated his ruthlessness in relation to a member of the Dublin Metropolitan Police, a man called Kells. What happened there?
The Dublin Metropolitan Police, the G Division, many of the most active members had been shot by Collins' squad by the spring of 1920. Dublin Castle was in trouble in terms of getting information about Republicans. And what happened then was that Henry Kells, a policeman who was just a regular policeman who wasn't a detective, he was brought into Mountjoy Jail in order to identify Republican prisoners. So the Republican prisoners, a number of them were brought onto the yard, and Clancy recognised Kells and he recognised what was happening, the significance of Kells being in the prison. So he called out to him, he said, Kells, so this is the work you're on, look out. And then sometime afterwards, Michael Collins sent in a note into Clancy in the prison with, "I'm going to Kells tomorrow," signed MC, written on it. And Kells was shot the following morning.
Now, we know the outcome of the Mountjoy hunger strike. The prisoners were released. So tell us about the arrest of McKee and Clancy on the eve of Bloody Sunday, the 21st of November 1920.
Clancy and McKee were both involved in the planning of Bloody Sunday. And on Saturday night, most of the Republican leadership who had been involved in the planning of Bloody Sunday met at Vaughan's Hotel. Just before a raid by the auxiliaries and by the Crown Forces, Clancy and McKee left and they went to a safe house nearby belonging to a family called Fitzpatrick. Shortly afterwards, the house was raided. Now, Clancy had actually arrived at the house before McKee. McKee came in and felt that he'd been followed and he wasn't sure if they should leave. And they discussed it and they decided to stay and brazen it out, because if you're caught in the streets after curfew and you weren't a member of the Crown Forces, you were essentially admitting that you were up to something. So they destroyed a list of names of the people that were to be shot in the following morning and some other papers. And, you know, shortly afterwards, the house was raided. McKee and Clancy and Sean Fitzpatrick, the house owner, they were all brought down to Dublin Castle.
Now, despite their arrest, the operation obviously went ahead infamously as planned, and Collins's men assassinated a number of British intelligence agents across Dublin City. The aftermath was horrific, not just for the citizens who were shot at Croke Park by the Crown Forces, but also for McKee and Clancy. What happened on the night of Bloody Sunday?
The British weren't fully sure of the significance of Clancy or McKee, but they knew that they caught two big fish and they were happy with their lot. But then the minute the information started filtering through about what happened at 9 o'clock that morning, where the intelligence agents had been shot, the atmosphere began to change and it increasingly got worse during the course of the day. Now, there was a large number of prisoners in Dublin Castle, but ultimately it ended up with McKee, Clancy and another Clare man called Conor Clune, who was arrested in Vaughan's Hotel. They were left in the guardroom of Dublin Castle and they were killed while in custody. Now, Clune more than likely wasn't involved in the volunteers at all, or even if he was, it wasn't at any significant level. Now, the British released a statement implying that the men tried to escape, but they never explained why the three men felt the need to escape unless they felt they were more in danger, because essentially at the time, if you tried to escape, you were running into a machine gun post and it was, you know, kind of a suicidal venture to try and escape. There's contradictory evidence about what exactly happened to them, but essentially the gist of it was that McKee seems to have borne the worst of it and was defiant apparently to the end. Now, that's based on information from people who saw the bodies, but also some of Collins's agents within Dublin Castle. Clancy seems to have been finished off probably quickly enough. He was shot to the head and Clun was obviously killed as well. Now, the British obviously maintained to the end that three men had been shot while trying to escape, but Republicans really disbelieved that completely.
In the aftermath of the Bloody Sunday assassinations and the subsequent Crown Force retaliation at Croke Park, Michael Collins's agent and Dublin Metropolitan Police spy David Nelligan was pressed into service. He was ordered to see if he could locate the two leading Dublin IRA commanders, Dick McKee and Pather Clancy, who had been captured. In this extract from Nelligan's witness statement, he describes what he discovered.
I did not know them personally, but when I went to the Bridewell, I saw no one answering to the description given to me. I called by appointment to St. Michael's and John's Church in Exchange Street, where Frank Thornton had 12 men waiting to rescue them, and I told them they were not in the Bridewell. That meant that the prisoners were in the castle, in the custody of the auxiliaries, and as good as dead. A fantastic story of an escape by these two men was put out later by the castle authorities is an excuse for murdering them. Actually, McKee, Clancy and Clun had been murdered by the auxiliaries as a reprisal in a guard room in Exchange Court, next door to and inside the castle gate. Collins was extremely upset over the disappearance of McKee and Clancy and wanted them rescued at all costs.
The words there of David Nelligan, the famous spy in the castle. The Dublin IRA leader Frank Thornton, who knew both men very well, was involved in getting the remains of the two men, and here he recalls what he saw.
I was at the postmortem. We got the bodies handed over to us. McKee was ripped from there to there and from here to here, right down with bayonets. Just ripped every rib in his body and every bone in his body was broken. And it struck us at the time when we looked at Clancy that it would look as if McKee was standing in front of Clancy trying to save him or safeguard him. Because Clancy was shot there, one wound, a gun straight up to the head and blew the head out.
Cormac, what impact then did the deaths of McKee and Clancy have on the Republican movement, particularly in Dublin?
On a personal level, the deaths of McKee and Clancy had a massive impact on Collins and the men around him. Liam Tobin said, for example, that it knocked the gut out of Bloody Sunday for them, that it kind of counteracted the military impact of the shooting of the intelligence officers, for example. Collins himself took awful chances to try and pay his respect to McKee and Clancy, you know, dressing them in volunteer uniform and being seen at the funeral and the graveside and the likes of that. I think it took him a long time to overcome it. It hardened hearts in Dublin as well from the Republican perspective. And, you know, it drove a desire for revenge within IRA men.
And Cormac, why do you think these two men are not as prominent in folk memory, in historical memory, as other leading Republicans during the War of Independence? I mean, you wrote the first book on Pather Clancy. There isn't a book on Dick McKee that I'm aware of. So why are they not better known?
I think there's a couple of reasons, really. Firstly, we say the month before Bloody Sunday, the month afterward, there was an awful lot of major events that occurred that overshadowed the deaths of McKee or Clancy. If that happened another time in the conflict, they would have been more prominently known, I think, not just Bloody Sunday, but the Kilmichael ambush, the burning of Cork City, the killing of Father Griffin in Galway, the death of Terence McSweeney, the hanging of Kevin Barry, and all these things, I think, possibly took away from the impact of McKee and Clancy's deaths in the general public. As a secret army, maybe there wasn't as much information, there weren't maybe as well known outside reasonably small group of men in Dublin as they would have been had they been also involved in politics as being TDs or something as well. And, you know, we'd say that probably the death of Collins as well in 1922 removed the leader that they were closest to.
Well, Cormac, you've certainly done your part in bringing the story of Pather Clancy to light. Will you tell us a little bit about the Pather Clancy Festival?
Yeah, it's an annual festival in Cranny and Cumeen, that area of West Clare, Pather Clancy's home place. And it combines family with sporting and cultural events. Now, the goal will be on the weekend of the 70th of July this year that there will be a historical debate about Clancy's significance in the War of Independence. For anybody who's interested in further information, there's a Facebook page called the Pather Clancy Festival.
Well, of course, this is an important centenary year for Pather Clancy, so let's hope the festival does go ahead in Cranny, either in July or later in the year. Cormac, many thanks for joining us on the History Show this evening.